Welcome to the Gold Standard here on the 440 Sports Network, your Nashville Predators podcast. My name is Braden Gall. You can follow me on Twitter at Braden Gall.
And I'm Adam Vingan on Twitter at Adam Vingan.
Well, it's been a little while, first of all. Big show today. A lot of fun topics. A little lighter on the mood today, Adam. But how have you been after vacation, staycation? How are you, sir?
I'm good. Staying inside as much as I can. But staycations are always good. It just involves me sitting on the couch for a lot of time.
What did you watch?
What did I watch?
Non-sports related.
What did I watch non-sports related? I finished Schitt's Creek.
Oh, excellent. One of the best shows on television.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Once they won all of the Emmys, I decided to give it a chance.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I've got to admit, my wife was a early adopter to
Schitt's
Creek.
So was my wife, yeah. And I was skeptical, but then I decided to watch it, and I was pretty hooked.
Ew, David. Ew.
It's non-sports, sports-related. I started watching Ted Lasso on Apple with Jason Sudeikis.
I like Sudeikis, yeah.
That's been so far so good. Trying to think of
you can tell this is going to be a light episode.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else.
I think Schitt's Creek in 2020 is the perfect palate cleanser at the end of the night.
If you've had a stressful day,
or even like, there's a lot of shows out there that are great that are very tense and heavy. We're watching The Undoing right now on HBO, which is Nicole Kidman. Right. It's all about the murder of somebody's mom, and it's like, oh my god, this is heavy. So at the end of the episode, we have to like immediately watch a palate cleanser. Mm-hmm. And since I like South Park, and my wife is not going to watch that, Schitt's Creek has been our palate cleanser for almost the entire 2020, and we watched all of it in real time back when it came out. So
what's funny is that I think my palate cleanser is The West Wing.
That's a pretty intellectual palate cleanser.
Yeah, but you think about what our government would be like if it was run by Martin Sheen. Is it Martin Sheen? It's Martin Sheen.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great asides in speeches and soliloquies, whatever you call them. You're the Shakespeare guy.
It's an Aaron Sorkin show, so there's a lot of
long rambling,
self-important. Yes, it's everything you expect out of an Aaron Sorkin show.
Yes, no question. All right, so we're going to talk hockey today. Good to have you back after you went nowhere. And a couple of things. You had a really interesting in-depth poll with all of the Preds fans. You asked a lot of questions about the team to sort of gauge the pulse of the fan base. So we'll touch on that here right out of the gate. We obviously have sort of some new information to some degree about how the season could look. And so we'll dive into what we think divisions should look like moving forward in 2021, potentially. Again, no reason to think that the season's going to start until 2021. And obviously, Adam, something that has no real meaning at all to on-ice production, to championship-level performances, to actual anything. But people lose their ever-loving minds about jerseys. And so the NHL dropped their reverse retro jerseys, and we have many things to say about them.
Yes, we do. But let's start with that poll that you're discussing.
Yes. So first of all, what was the goal of the poll, Adam?
The goal of the poll. Well, we throughout the Athletic Network, the NHL Athletic Network, have done these fan surveys from time to time. This is actually the second one that I've done. The first one that I did, I think I did it in April. But this one was much more, I think it was much more well-received, at least in terms of the number of people who replied. I think I had more than double the amount of respondents for the second one as I did the first one. And I just thought, you know, the off season is over, free agency, the draft, major moves had been made, which we've talked about at length on this show. So I thought it was a good time to take the pulse of the Predators fan base. So I asked 15 questions. I thought it was important to have a good range of questions, but not too many questions, because I wanted people to actually finish the survey. None of the results really surprised me, and we can go over some of them. I have them up right now. The first question I asked was, how confident are you in David Poile as Predators general manager from 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest? I asked similar questions about John Hines and the Predators coaching staff, UC Saros becoming the Predators' next franchise goaltender. How confident are you that the Predators can win the Stanley Cup in the next 5 years? So some interesting responses. The average rating on the David Poile question, 1 through 5, with 5 being the highest, was 3.3. So slightly above average.
Rate about 20% of your respondents were a 1 or a 2, meaning the worst.
Yes.
Confident. So that means 4 out of 5 people are above average on David Poile, in my opinion.
Yes. So right? He received an average rating of 3.3. What's interesting is that similarly to these fan surveys, our analytical guru, Dom Lecision, did NHL front office confidence rankings recently, which is something he's done over the past couple of years. And I was surprised to see just how far the Predators have fallen. I think in 2017, he does it every offseason. So 2017, after the Predators were coming off of the Stanley Cup final, they were number 1 on the front office confidence rankings list. I think they were 3 in 2018, 11 in 2019, and 24 wow. this year. So
that's a pretty big drop.
Yes. So, I mean, we've talked about this. We did an entire episode about David Poile, but it certainly seems as if though the fan base has soured a little bit on the direction of the front office. The confidence question about John Hines, the average rating was 2.8.
I was surprised it was that much lower, considering it's sort of directly tied to Poile. If you think Poile is doing his job well, then you probably trust in John Hines as the right hire, right?
Right, and I think some of that just has to do with the fact that we really haven't seen a lot of John Hines.
Of course, an unknown.
Right, he's been the coach for almost a calendar year, but he's only coached 32 games when you include the postseason. So I think a lot of fans are still, the jury is still out, but there are many who think it was an uninspiring hire to begin with. As we've discussed in previous episodes, I am curious to see how that changes with the hirings of Dan Hynote and Todd Richards, as John now has his own staff for the first time. The confidence question about UC Saros becoming the Predators' next franchise goaltender, the average rating was exactly 3, 3.0.
That's about right. That's just a standard deviation curve at that point.
Yes. And then how confident are you that the Predators can win the Stanley Cup in the next 5 years? The average rating, 2.3.
The number there that's interesting to me is roughly 13% of people are pretty confident, meaning a 4 or a 5, that they're going to win a cup in the next 5 years, which means, you know, the other 87% are not.
Right.
So but that's, again, winning a championship and a cup, as we've talked about, is the goal, but it may not be the exact bar you should define everybody on.
Right.
Winning a championship's hard.
It is hard. And we won't go through all 15 questions. I'll just pick out some of them. I asked the Predators should consider a rebuild if they do not win the Stanley Cup by, and the choices were, it is past time, meaning they should have already started a rebuild, 2021, 2022, 2023, or 2024. And the majority of respondents said 2022, 32.12% of the close to 1,000 people who participated in this survey said the Predators should consider a rebuild if they do not win by 2022.
Which is the two-year window
right, and
that we've talked about.
And as one of my readers so astutely pointed out, in my eyes, this is what the reader said, quote, in my eyes, 2022 is when a rebuild would happen. There are a lot of contracts that expire that year, including John Hines, Philip Forsberg, and Matthias Ekholm. Jaroslav Askarov's KHL deal will also be done, so you can bring him over then. This team has a maximum of 2 more years to win, which I would agree with.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that reader summed it up perfectly.
Yeah. I do like the will the Predators make the playoffs next year? 75% still very confident that this team will make the playoffs, and I think that's fair. I think that might actually be lower than I expected. I think fans should expect to make the playoffs this
year.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they should as well, and some of that might have to do with what the playoffs might look like,
yeah,
like they did this past season when they added to the playoff field. Which departed player will the Predators miss the most? Nick Bonino, 54.76%.
That's an easy answer.
Followed by Craig Smith at 35.2%. Which offseason acquisition has you most excited? Luke Kunin, 49.95%, though multiple people said to me that they weren't excited about any of them, but Kunin had them the most excited of the least excited.
It's funny, like, I'm I think Borowiecki is gets you excited for different reasons, right? Because
yes.
he sort of has like this off the field persona or off the ice persona.
Yeah.
Benning, I think, is far more interesting than his vote total was in this list. I think he's a far more productive and important piece to the roster than a 7% vote reception in this list. But if you really think about it, Cunnan is the most intriguing.
Yes.
He's not exciting necessarily.
He's the youngest.
Right, but he's a first round pick.
Yes.
You got, you know, like you went out and traded for him with Bonino. I think there's at least, and you're expecting maybe more production from him, top level talent. I think that's a fair, you know, vote total there for him.
Which underperforming forward has the best chance of bouncing back next season? Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, or Ryan Johansson? Philip Forsberg, 43.6%. Victor Arvidsson, 24.59%. Matt Duchene, 23.86%. Ryan Johansson, 7.95%.
Yeah, that's,
to me,
that's the story.
That was the most interesting result of this entire poll, was the fact that Ryan Johansson was so far down the list. I thought it might be, I figured one of them would, first of all, I actually thought that Arvidsson would win this just based on the fact that you could point to injuries as the main reason as to why he wasn't good last year versus the other three.
And he's given us no reason to think that if healthy, he wouldn't produce.
Right. We saw how he played in the bubble. He looked more like himself, as did Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson. But I was surprised to see Ryan Johansson so far down that list. And as I wrote, it appears that the fan base at large has soured on Johansson.
It's funny. I think I have more expectation for Johansson than I do Duchene. But some of that is where he's situated in the lineup.
Perhaps,
and
yes.
We've talked about this a lot. If they decide to break up the top line and move Forsberg down, I feel more comfortable with all four of them. But that also could reduce overall production to some degree.
Yes.
So I don't know what to think on that. Obviously, it's a big year for Ryan Johansson.
Maybe. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
We'll just go through the whole thing. Was drafting Yaroslav Askarov with the number 11 pick the right move? 68.12% said yes. 23.29% undecided. 8.59% said no, which sort of ties in with the UC Saros confidence question. As one reader commented, curious to see how Saros responds knowing he has a two-year window before Askarov comes knocking. Number 11.
Good problem to have.
Yes,
for the Predators.
As we've discussed. How should the Predators use the remaining cap space? Sign a big-name free agent, trade for a player on a cap-strapped team, or save it for an in-season move? 49.69% said trade for a player on a cap-strapped team.
This tells me that your audience is smart.
Yes.
Most of these results, and I would assume it's the same collection of people that are listening to this podcast, and I would like to think that that means that people are in tune with expectations and strategies, you know, for success here.
Yeah, so nearly half said trade for a player on a cap-strapped team. Yep. 31% said save it for an in-season move. About 19% said sign a big-name free agent.
That's alligator arms right there. That's going over the middle and getting popped with a bad contract.
Yes, and this was a fun one to do. You can undo one trade since 2016. Which do you choose?
This is a layup.
Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson, Shea Weber for PK Subban, the Kyle Turris three-team trade, the Ryan Hartman trade, or Kevin Fiala for Mikhail Granlund. As you might expect, the Kyle Turris trade. 53.83%
shocking
said Kyle Turris, followed by 22.67% for Kevin Fiala for Mikhail Granlund, 12.84% Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson, 5.8% Ryan Hartman, and 4.87% Shea Weber for PK Subban.
A couple of observations, two quick ones for me. One, the idea that more people think the Ryan Hartman trade was bad than trading away Shea Weber is just a sort of a bizarre. They're right. It's just a bizarre thing to read on in paper, or in this case, digitally. Obviously, Kyle Turris is going to win this. I do think that 23% voting for getting rid of Kevin Fiala for Mikhail Granlund, that's a savvy vote for 23% of the people to look at that trade and realize that Kevin Fiala is pretty damn good. And that Mikhail Granlund was
not.
So I think there's some savviness there.
The reader comments, one said the Turris trade is the obvious one to undo, but I picked the Fiala trade. Fiala is the kind of young dynamic winger that we still need.
Yep.
Someone said, I want Shea Weber back. This team has gotten more talented but progressively softer since he left. There is a 0% chance that happens with Weber's presence in the locker room. And the third comment I included said, it's the Hartman trade. They gave up a first round pick for a young guy who had one decent season, but largely played an agitator role.
Yeah. Hartman's not even on the conversation for me.
Question number 13 of 15. If the Predators were to protect seven forwards, and this is actually another one of the more interesting responses. If the Predators were to protect seven forwards in the Seattle expansion draft, which top four defensemen should they expose? Keeping in mind, of course, that Roman Josi has a fall no movement clause and therefore must be protected. Yeah. Matthias Ekholm, number one, at 45.65%, which makes the most sense from a contractual standpoint. He'll have 1 year left on his contract. He'll be 31 years old. Here is where I thought it was interesting. Number two was Dante Fabbro at 32.3%, followed by Ryan Ellis at 22.05%.
You thought Ellis would get more votes than
Fabbro? No, I thought it was surprising to me that more people would rather expose Dante Fabbro than Ryan Ellis, Fabbro being significantly younger than the two of them, and also being a restricted free agent and under team control.
Okay, I see what you're saying. You're looking at it not from a talent, production, value standpoint. You're looking at it more from a contractual standpoint.
I am thinking of what David Poile said when he made the decision to protect Calle Järnkrok over James Neal, when he told me it was a business decision.
Yeah.
So when I'm thinking of it as a business decision, it doesn't make a lot of sense to protect, to expose Dante Fabbro.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a lot of people, though, like you, look at Ryan Ellis and say he's undervalued.
Yes. It's funny because
when there was a while there he wasn't, when he signed and then he got back to being good again.
When he signed that contract, I was a bit skeptical, but especially last season, I think he and even when he came back from injury a couple of years ago, I think...
Dude, he was on a tear that year.
He demonstrated how... I think...
Wasn't he like plus 29 in like 45 games or something like that?
That would not surprise me, but I mean, I know the term elite is thrown around too much in sports circles, but you could make the argument that Ryan Ellis is an elite defenseman. Number 14, who is the Predators' biggest rival? Chicago, Dallas, St. Louis, or other? Chicago, number one at 42.56%. Followed by Dallas at 32.75, St. Louis at 16.43, and other at 8.26. I got many write-in responses for the Winnipeg Jets. As one reader said, I still hate Anaheim the most, LOL.
Yeah, I was surprised Anaheim wasn't on the list. By the way, plus 26 in 44 games.
Plus 26 in 44 games.
That's pretty close.
I understand that the hatred runs deep with the Chicago Blackhawks. I personally thought that the Dallas Stars would be higher just because of what's happened in recent memory.
It's more recent, yeah.
I know, but the Blackhawks are on the downturn, and you lost a playoff series and the Winter Classic to the Dallas Stars. I think that would heat up the rivalry a little bit more.
All right, let's get into it. This raises an interesting question to me, because I'm gonna use Chicago and my Packers fandom as an example here.
All right.
The Bears are the biggest rival for the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
It's not even close. It's the Chicago Bears. As a fan of the Green Bay Packers, who is 38 years old, the Bears have been largely irrelevant and have not really pissed me off as a Packers fan, basically ever. In fact, they help us win a Super Bowl. Thank you, Jay Cutler. So I am not really like, I don't have a hatred for the Bears, but they are by far the biggest rivalry for the Packers. I have a hatred for the Cowboys and Vikings and maybe to some degree the Lions, but really the Vikings and the Cowboys, because they beat the Packers so many times in the 90s and the 2000s. And like, they've been the more worthy adversary. So Chicago to me, like, Dallas is a current rival. Anaheim has got more of a long-standing, you know, yes, depth to it with this roster. But Chicago to me should always be the number one rivalry for this team, big picture. You can maybe interchange who you hate the most in the short term, but to me, the Blackhawks have to win this vote every time you do it, because I think that's the team you hate the most if you are a Nashville Predators fan over your entire lifespan, not just like on any given moment.
Yes,
does that make sense? Like, there could be two teams that you hate the most. One that's just sort of always there as your arch rival, you know, the Alabama Auburn, right? Or whatever, versus who you hate the most right now because you're playing them in the playoffs, or Corey Perry knocked Ryan Ellis out, or right, Ryan Johansson hates Corey Perry. Basically,
Ryan Kessler.
Yeah, right. Like, there's, does that make sense?
Yes.
Maybe two answers to this.
Well, yeah. I mean, because, you know, as a Duke fan, I hate the University of North Carolina with a fiery passion. And it doesn't matter how good or bad Carolina is.
I know where you're going with this.
I will hate them. But but over time, you know, there was a time in the early aughts where I feel like my hatred for the University of Maryland was greater than it was for Carolina, or at least rivaling it when you consider all of the big games that Duke and Maryland played in the ACC or even in the NCAA tournament.
That's the 2002 national champion Terrapins, Juan Dixon,
Chris Wilcox, and Lonnie Baxter, and all of those.
Didn't
players.
Jay Williams have an unbelievable final minute against Maryland?
Well, that was the miracle minute, as it's known in Duke lore, where they were down 10 with a minute left at Maryland and won in overtime.
So do you hate Virginia now? Because Virginia's pretty damn good, and they wear just as many pleated khakis as you guys do.
I don't know if my hatred for Virginia is really there.
Okay, they're pretty good.
They are good.
Tony Bennett's so likable, though.
Yes,
so.
But I understand what you're saying, that you can have one main rival, but then have other teams sort of come and go, and sometimes maybe usurp the overall rival just for a little bit, and then then descend. And then the last question. Because then we have to get to the jerseys. The last question is, would you be comfortable attending a game at Bridgestone Arena next season if COVID-19 protocol is put in place? Limited capacity, mandatory face coverings, etc. 72.7% said yes. 27.3% said no. The response I got was, I'd go to a game if I could maintain social distancing and wear a mask. I wouldn't go if ticket prices keep going up, which was a popular sentiment.
So I wonder what keeps people going to the games today. Ticket prices or COVID? Which one?
Right, exactly.
That would have been an interesting poll question.
Yes.
I don't. That's a not surprised by those numbers, but also I think it's easy to answer that question if you don't know exactly what protocols are, or you know what I mean. Like if it's,
it will be different because it's indoors. I mean, you can't make the same comparison to the NFL because it's outdoors.
Right.
A couple of weeks ago, I believe there was a report saying that the NBA is considering for fans who sit courtside or within a certain proximity to the courtside around the bench area, that they might have to pass two like negative rapid tests within 2 days of attending a game or something like that.
Wow.
Like they're going to be incredibly strict. I don't have the exact protocol in front of me. I'm sorry, but you know, I wonder with the plexiglass if that would change for hockey.
Yeah.
Because as we know in the NBA, there is no plexiglass. You are right there. Perhaps they put up plexiglass. that would be interesting. The Nashville Raptors, by the way, would put up plexiglass.
Yes.
I would be curious to see what teams would decide to do. At this very moment, it's hard to imagine there being any fans.
Yeah.
As we've seen in the NFL in recent days, teams that have allowed fans to be in the stadiums are reneging.
We're not going in the right direction as a country right now. I don't believe that we'll be able to. We're never going to lock down again. I don't think the people will sort of allow that. But hopefully, because we have more information and are more prepared to handle a surge like this, hopefully it means people can act more empathetically and view the issue as a more holistic problem than maybe we did in March and April. And obviously with more information. So I would not be going to any games anytime soon. I'm not going to family gatherings with my parents because we don't feel comfortable with that. And if you want to call us names for that, that's fine. We just think it's doing our part to keep everybody from getting a virus. So, all right.
Let's talk jerseys.
So I wanted to talk divisions. Do you think we should talk divisions first or should we talk jerseys first?
Let's talk jerseys first and see how much time we have left. I think more people are interested in the jerseys right now.
I know. That's why I was trying to save it till after we talk divisions because I'm concerned that all the people care about is the jerseys. So if you want to go check out the Athletics rankings, I believe this was Mark Lazarus who did his rankings.
We all voted for our reverse retro rankings. Say that 10 times fast. And then Mark wrote up our results.
That's right. And he had his own opinions, which of course could be different. Jerseys are the most, and by the way, pay for good journalism. Go to The Athletic. I forgot to do all this stuff. Make sure you subscribe to good journalism at The Athletic. And please rate, review, and subscribe to this show. Share it and tell all your friends because this is the kind of quality content you get. Retro reverse jersey analysis. That's what you get on this show, on The Gold Standard, Adam. All right, so how do you want to cover this? I think we start with the Predators.
Let's start with the Predators.
And then we'll work our way through some other ones that we love and some other ones that we hate. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, so in our power rankings...
Don't give it away.
You don't want to give it away yet?
Where the Predators are located?
Where the Predators are.
Let's tell everybody where the Predators were located.
The Predators were located tied for 23rd out of 31 with an average score of 4.5. Now, I imagine that those of you who are listening have seen these sweaters, jerseys, sweaters. To me, they're interchangeable. They are a take on the inaugural sweater in terms of the style of the number, the silver, I believe they're called yokes, the shoulder things. I don't know what they, whatever. They have technical terms.
The shoulder plate. Which we'll call a yoke.
Yes. The saber-toothed tiger in the front is stylized like the inaugural, as it was at the beginning of franchise history. It has since been updated, as we know.
Yeah.
But it's styled
for a reason.
Yes, it is styled in the original way with the current colors. As we sit here, and you know, we have discussed on this show how particular I am and have been in my life about jerseys.
I also have very strong opinions.
I don't love it, and here's why. And people have pointed this out to me. I understand that the Predators are all in on the gold motif, and they've done a great job of marketing it. But if you want to make this sweater look more retro, it needed to have a navy base. And now people have pointed out, well, if it's a reverse retro, if it was navy, it wouldn't be reverse.
So silver would almost be the reverse retro main color, right?
But when I look,
in theory,
yes, for some reason,
which is awful,
the gold body, we'll call it, with the silver shoulders, it doesn't look great to me. I think it would.
You're being so nice.
I know. I think it would look better if it were navy. I mean,
I 100% agree. The gold. Okay, I'm with you on the gold. And they have. It took me a little while to sort of understand the branding and the marketing and the messaging and the, you know, all the things that the plan and the strategy is around making Nashville gold on the ceiling. I've literally told David Poile to his face, you should literally paint the ceiling gold inside Bridgestone Arena. Like, what? Now there's some reasons they can't do that. Like, it has to be a dark ceiling. You know, there has to be a dark color up there for like optical purposes and stuff. But like, I literally looked at him and Sean one time and I said, guys, why don't you actually paint the ceiling gold? And then you literally would have it on the ceiling. I get why they're doing that. That's not the point of this exercise necessarily. And teams seem to go down two different paths. One is nibble around the edges and sort of, you know, try to throw a hat tip to some old uniforms, some retro uniforms, but really not really reverse anything and play it safe, which is what the Predators did, in my opinion.
And other people have pointed out.
And other people and other teams went way, way off.
Yes.
And some of those look awful. So, I mean, I think the Predators are right in the middle on this. I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think it's great.
And what's interesting, and this has been pointed out as well, is that the shoulder patch, which is the fossilized tiger, was not on the original sweater. That wasn't unveiled, I think, until a couple of years after. And then, again, that's me being particular about the design of a jersey.
But that's what we're doing.
Right. So when I look at this sweater, I'm underwhelmed. I mean, I get what they're trying to do. I feel that first of all, it's going to sell like crazy because people love these things.
Yeah.
But for me, I would have preferred it to have a navy base. There's a lot of gold.
What year was the dark navy throwback with the sweater?
2009, 2010.
With the necktie or whatever,
2011,
right?
2011, around there. They weren't going to do that, but think about their original navy sweaters. I think if they could have done a take on that, I think it would be more popular.
See, now I'm having trouble picturing that one. I'm thinking of the third. I'm thinking of the third uniform that was the dark navy with only white on it.
Yes,
and that uniform to me, which I know they never were going to do, but that uniform to me is in the spirit of the exercise, which is true retro and true reversing it all up, right? Because navy is one of your main colors, but it's definitely not your primary color. And if you go back to that, I just think that had like a vintage. I think that one had a vintage look that was truly third uniformish. The one that they're harkening back to and the one you're talking about is more of that was like their actual uniform that they actually wore on a more consistent basis, the one you're talking about.
Yes. I'm not talking about the alternate all-navy sweater.
I want the alternate one.
I'm talking about the original navy sweater with the silver sleeves that they wore their first year.
I think you could have done a all-navy, like the alternate one, with silver as your secondary color and then gold piping or trim. And I think that would have looked pretty slick. I think there's a balance between the teams that got this right this exercise right and the ones that got it wrong. There's a balance between trying something different, trying something new, and also trying to be vintage and retro at the same time. And that's difficult because, again, they're technically antithetical, right? New and retro are opposites. But I think, and we can get into this now if you want to, the ones that I find to be the most aesthetically pleasing are the ones that have a new look from their normal one and an old vibe in the truest form of the exercise.
Well, the number one jersey, according to our power rankings, was the Colorado Avalanche, who finally harkened back to their Quebec Nordique roots and have a Nordiques jersey with the fleur-de-lis along the base with the Avalanche colors, with the maroon and the blue.
And a little bit more blue in there.
It looks great. It looks so good.
It is number three on my list. So it's top three for me as well. I thought immediately when I looked at these, Colorado was number three for me. But so I agree that it's one of the best, and I agree. Again, a little modern flair stylistically, but retro vibes with the logo. And so that to me is doing the exercise to perfection.
And I think the number two and three teams on our list also nailed it. Two, the Los Angeles Kings, because they took the black and gold vibe that Wayne Gretzky wore when he was a member of the Kings, but then added their old purple and gold color palette. So, I mean, we know how important purple and gold is to the city of Los Angeles.
Sure.
I mean, that is going to be an incredibly popular sweater.
Now, I don't like the look of it.
I love it.
But I love how they executed it.
Yes, I love it.
To how you explained it all, right?
Because the LA Kings, that logo, sort of the chevron logo, I guess you can call it, I mean, that's a very popular retro look anyway, the black and silver. But when you put it on the purple and gold, I mean, I think that's going to sell super fast. And the same can be said about the Minnesota Wild going with the North Stars color scheme.
So number one on my list, and do you want to just give your top three here? Because, again, you can read all this on The Athletic, but that's sort of a poll. I want to know what your favorite ones are.
I love the Avalanche Nordique jersey.
Okay.
I love the LA Kings purple and gold jersey. Now I'm just scrolling through. I love that the New Jersey Devils went back with the Christmas tree jersey with green as the main color, as opposed to just the red. The Capitals one harkens back to my childhood.
It's terrible. It's terrible, dude.
I the screaming.
We have to agree on something. We have to disagree on something.
The Screaming Ugh. Eagle means a lot to me as a child.
It's such an ugly jersey.
I don't know. Let me see.
This is the beauty of jerseys, though. There is no right or wrong answer.
I'm a fan of the New York Rangers. I mean, I love the Lady Liberty logo that they used to rock, and now they're rocking it again.
So you're talking to a reformed, on-the-wagon New York Rangers fan.
Yes.
I grew up a New York Rangers fan. And that jersey does remind me of a lot of players I loved growing up. Adam Graves, Mark Messier, when Gretzky played for the Rangers. There was a lot that I loved about the Rangers. Again, I grew up, my first ever sporting event in any sport was Madison Square Garden watching a Rangers game in 1987. So my dad grew up a Rangers fan in the 60s, so I have Rangers blood, deep ties in my family. I gave that up when the Predators came to town and I could start watching my own team. But also because in the late 90s, the Rangers continually disappointed me in that jersey. So I have some like PTSD with that sweater. I like it, but it also reminds me of all the underachieving that took place with really, really good teams in the late 90s for the New York Rangers. My top three. Can I give you my top three?
Sure.
Number one, Carolina.
Okay.
Now
we are going to have a conversation.
With a bullet, number one.
Now we're going to have a conversation. Because I was thinking hard about this the other day. I understand and I appreciate the fact that the Carolina Hurricanes, who of course, I'm sure everybody knows this, but for those who don't know, the Hartford Whalers relocated to Carolina and became the Hurricanes 20-something years ago. I appreciate the fact that the Hurricanes have started to lean into their Hartford roots. But at the same time, it's just starting. I mean, all jerseys are cash grabs. But for,
strike up the band.
No brass bonanza right now. But for me, I can't get a word in edgewise now. But the point being, I can talk over the brass bonanza.
I'm gonna fade that down.
The point is that it just feels a little I don't know, slimy at this point? Like, if you live in Hartford.
Because they left you behind.
Yeah, if you live in Hartford, are you buying any of this stuff? Like, the NHL makes, like, NHL-branded Hartford Whalers stuff, like vintage hockey that you can buy on its own. It's very popular. I mean, you see a lot of Hartford Whaler paraphernalia.
That's, Mitchell and Ness does a lot of that stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. But, like, if you're a fan of the Hartford Whalers or were a fan of the Hartford Whalers, are you going to buy a Carolina Hurricanes branded Hartford Whalers sweater? No.
But
like for me, it's the slimiest of the cash grabs at this point.
See, I don't disagree with that. Now, I'm not gonna put any money down on it.
Right.
This is just which one do I like the best?
It looks great.
And
it looks great.
I know. And as a kid growing up, and I listened to Sports Babe all the time growing up, like I loved everything about that logo, the colors, the team, like everything about it was cool. And then it went away. And now because it went away, it's gotten cooler.
Yes.
To your point, as time has gone along. And so I think you're right. It's almost unfairly number one for me because it's sort of like the Nordiques. Not every team has an entire club to go back to do a logo with, right? Like the Avalanche can do that. You know, if Winnipeg
is hideous, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It's the gray. I don't understand that. The silver. Now they could do something with the Thrashers if they wanted to, but then they could also throw back to themselves. So there's a weird.
What's interesting
a
is
weird
that
element
that the Arizona Coyotes, who were the original Winnipeg Jets, have have leaned into their previous Winnipeg Jets history. You know, the jerseys that were retired by the original Winnipeg Jets are retired by the Arizona Coyotes, for example, or at least recognized by the Arizona Coyotes. I don't think the current Winnipeg Jets have anything to do or want anything to do with the Atlanta Thrashers.
No, I agree.
Right.
But again, the ones that did it the best are the ones that had something to go back to.
Right.
Favorites are Carolina, number one, Minnesota, number two, and Colorado, number three.
Okay.
And those are my top three in large part because they had this other big thing to call back on.
Right. Like
I think Minnesota's colors are exceptional.
It looks great. And like you think of like the Vegas Golden Knights, and you know, how can a team that's 3 years old have a reverse retro? Well, I think they took the jersey styling of one of their old minor league teams and then put the Vegas Golden Knights secondary logo on it. So it does
like
have a history.
Like the Dixie Flyers thing that the Predators
did. It has
did.
A history yeah. in Las Vegas, that style of sweater. It's just updated with the Golden Knights motif. The Islanders one made no sense to me because it was basically the same jersey. They just made it navy again as opposed to royal, which is what they were rocking, for several years until they went back to the royal blue.
I really liked Edmonton.
I didn't love it.
It's sort of in the same mold as Minnesota, right? These bright, bold colors with a white base. I thought that was really cool. I actually we'll get to Chicago in a second. I liked Pittsburgh. I love New Jersey. Those are like my top four or five are probably Carolina, Minnesota, Colorado, New Jersey, Edmonton, Pittsburgh. Probably those groups there. I like the ones that went for it. Like the Anaheim Ducks went for it. They leaned into the exercise and they sort of went with a totally new, different thing. It looks a little cheesy and goofy, but
well,
I think
it was cheesy and goofy, no pun intended. Because
right. But like to me, that at least was a better. That's better than just sort of nibbling around the edges the way the Islanders and the Predators somewhat. I mean, the Predators nibbled around the edges. They played it safe, and it means that the jersey's okay. I don't think it pops. I don't think it sings the way some of these teams that have gone took a bigger swing at it, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
we're talking a lot about not something that doesn't matter here.
I know, but it's fun. And, you know, I'm trying to think of which other ones I liked. I'm going back to, I like that Tampa Bay went back to their
I didn't mind
jerseys
that one. Yeah.
From like their first Stanley Cup win.
I liked Vancouver's if they didn't do like the color split down the middle of the chest. Like that bothered me. If they had kept it all one color, I would have liked Vancouver's.
Yeah, I remember those alternate sweaters where they had like the ombre styling where it was like the
right
for the original jersey was like the red fading into the blue. Now it's the green.
Do you want to know the ones I wrote yuck next to?
Let's hear them.
Just yuck. Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yuck. Florida. Yuck.
I don't mind Florida.
Columbus. Yuck.
Yeah.
Vegas. Yuck.
Yeah.
I thought Boston was solid, very much like the Predators, actually. I like Boston's.
I liked Arizona's.
I did not like Arizona's.
Yeah, I mean, they went for it.
Is it because of the colors that you just really enjoy?
I actually like Montreal's. I mean, I don't think Montreal's ever had a navy sweater or hasn't had a navy sweater in a long time, but I really like how it looks.
They claim it, according to Lazarus, they claim it was 1976. But I'm with you. The blue is kind of unique.
I mean, I know that. We don't have time for me to fight you on the Capitals one because we have about 10 minutes.
But it means a lot to you, so I understand.
Yes, but like it reminds me of the team. You know, growing up as a Capitals fan, it reminds me of the team in the late '90s that went to the Stanley Cup and then were swept by the Detroit Red Wings. But I always had a soft spot for the Screaming Eagle. It's called.
Was that Sergei Gonchar on that team?
It was Gonchar, yep. Adam Oates, Peter yep. Bondra, Ole Kolzig.
God, Bondra was a dominant force in Sega Genesis.
Joey Juno, Steve Konowalczyk, Phil Housley, you know, he can go on and on. Yeah. But you wanted to talk about the Chicago jersey, let's finish there.
I do want to bring up the Chicago jersey, and I thought it was interesting that I actually like the uniform. I think the sweater is a nice...
And they have a lot to pull from because they're an old franchise, but they've also had like 300 jerseys because of all the outdoor games.
I think it looks awesome. It's one of my favorite, like all black with the... red yolk,
they
say.
I think it's called a yolk.
Yeah. I think it looks great. I found it interesting that in the released photo of the Chicago Blackhawks, and in the story, Lazarus talks about sort of how it was posted like on Twitter and how they released it, because all these teams were releasing it on social media and how they didn't post a single picture of the front of it. I thought it was interesting that in the official photo released of each full-scale uniform, not the teasers, that the only guy who's standing sideways
was the Blackhawks
in the photo is the Blackhawks guy, which brings us to the logo itself. And I do think there is a more nuanced conversation about the Blackhawks logo. And I got to be honest, I've had lots of thoughts and opinions on Florida State Seminoles and Chief Illini Wick for Illinois and the Washington Football Club. Everyone has their own opinion on all that stuff. I have not seen a piece written in a more detailed and intelligent and rational way about one of these issues than Scott Powers did for The Athletic about the Blackhawks uniform. He talked to Native Americans who were fans of it, Native Americans who were not fans of it. He brought up lots of polling, history, where the Blackhawks got their name. I recommend everybody, before making a judgment on whether or not the Blackhawks should or should not remove their logo, to go read the story by Scott Powers on The Athletic, because it will give you at least a framework to understand all the different pieces that are involved in what's going on here. I am a 38-year-old white middle-aged man. I cannot sit here and tell you that I'm offended by it. Right. I am not. But I don't think it's my job to tell you if I'm offended by it or not. I don't think it's my place to tell you if I'm offended by it or not. And according to the story, there's a lot of studies out there about this particular logo, and one of them says that the vast majority of Native Americans find it to be a little bit offensive. And I just don't know why we... as middle-aged white dudes have a place to step in and say, no, you don't have a right to be offended. So that's my take on it. I think that's actually non-controversial, is to say, I don't really have a place to say this. Other people should decide it. That's sort of where I fall on it.
Well, the Chicago Blackhawks have actually taken the initiative, and they've announced it over the course of the summer, I think it was. Sort of like I'm trying to think of how to describe it, but they're doing a lot more outreach with Native American tribes and groups regarding the logo and just the history behind it. And they've also taken the steps of, I believe, banning all Native American paraphernalia in United Centers. Like, if you're a fan who used to wear a headdress to Blackhawks games, you're not allowed to do that anymore.
See, and again, that's where I've always viewed as a university and the Seminoles have, Florida State has a relationship with the Seminole tribe where they actually pay to use that name, and that's beneficial for both sides. I actually viewed higher education as sort of an honorable thing, but again, that's just my white perspective on that. Right. So I see somebody dressed in a headdress and I go, oh, that looks fun. Like, it doesn't, I'm not the guy that's allowed to really comment on this because I don't find any of it that offensive. You know, if you're running around trying to intentionally be rude, use the word Redskins, for example, then I think you're being a dick about it. But by and large, I don't know. I'm not the guy.
I know, but it's
I'm not
funny.
The guy to
it's
comment
funny
on it.
What makes, like, the Blackhawks, other than their logo and their name, don't really have much that leans into the Native American idea. They're not doing the tomahawk chop like the Braves are or the Seminoles are, and you know, they're not, you know, you know, I know that the Washington football team has finally changed its name, but the Blackhawks were not being as antagonistic about it as Daniel Snyder was for so long.
It's also listed as a slur, like in the dictionary.
Yes. Blackhawk is less of a slur, or it might not even be a slur.
It was named after a guy's military platoon, essentially, right, in World War One, the guy who bought the team. And so, again, not really anything to do with...
Right. So
there is a guy named Blackhawk that was a
So, like, I don't warrior. Think, like, for me, like, I haven't thought of the Blackhawks in the same way I have thought of the Seminoles and the Braves and the Redskins. But the Blackhawks have taken the initiative to do more learning and teaching to their fans as well as their organization about the origins of their name. I think there was even a couple of weeks ago, maybe even more than a month ago, someone vandalized a statue outside of United Center where it had the Blackhawk logo. So it's still a divisive issue.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, as you pointed out, that they were the one team that didn't seem to like throw their logo for their reverse retro in everybody's face.
It was nowhere intentionally. It's very obvious that they did not do that. And that tells you kind of all you need to know about what they think about their current status. But also there's a climate out there. I am torn between the anti-PC part of me that says everybody just needs to relax about this stuff, and the other part of me that wants to be sensitive to someone who genuinely is offended by something. So this is where that PC cancel culture sensitivity balance is really hard to figure out. So to me, it should not be about what I think. I am not offended by any of this stuff, but I'm not a Native American. So to me, it should be people who are Native American, who are, I don't know if it should be national or if it should be regional or if it should be the Chicago base or the fan base. They need to come together in some sort of group and make a decision, vote on it. I don't know how you do it, that tries to satisfy as many people as possible and then go from there. And I don't think I'm the guy to decide that stuff.
Neither am I. So
there you have that. But go read the story. Because,
yes,
again,
it's a great story. Scott put a lot of work into it. Even if you despise the Blackhawks like the majority of you do, according to my poll, it is a very interesting story.
It's a great history lesson.
It is a great history lesson. So I highly recommend it.
And I think done in a perfect way to lay out both sides of the discussion fairly so that you, the reader, can decide what you think.
Yeah.
So, which I think is the idea. Real quickly here, I know we got to wrap up here in just a minute, but divisions, first of all, last time I asked you this a couple of weeks ago, what do you think the season's going to look like? You didn't have a total games guess, but you thought it would be shortened. You thought there could be a Canadian division. Do you think we're going to have realignment in 2021 and a shortened season?
I do, just based on what the national insiders have reported. They are much more well-connected to the inner workings of the NHL at large than I am. It sounds like we are at least temporarily heading towards realignment. Gary Bettman has actually in the past week or so even said that, you know, said out loud that idea, on the record. So it is possible, the way our country is heading in right now, it seems more likely.
Do you want hockey or not? We might have to realign for a year if you want hockey. The Canadian teams, of course, Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Montreal, Ottawa, and Winnipeg. If they are in the division, you then need three divisions of eight teams in the United States. And I think it is fairly obvious that the West or the Pacific division, whatever it would be called, needs to sort of dictate this, because you've got Anaheim, San Jose, Los Angeles, Vegas, Arizona, Colorado, very clearly, and the Predators would lose Colorado in this case, very clearly in one division. You then need two more teams to be in the West. And the most logical choices to create that division are Dallas and Minnesota. So in theory, Colorado, Dallas, and Minnesota probably are going to get moved away from Nashville's division. Then you can discuss, what do you want Nashville's division to look like? Do you want it to be more Sunbelty, more Southern, and include maybe Washington, D.C., if you can call that Southern?
Mid-Atlantic.
Or do you want it to be more of a true centralized division, which would create some cool new and familiar old rivalries, which would involve, and this is how I went down a rabbit hole late last night drawing up maps and divisions and stuff. This is how I settled on it. The Central Division would include Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville, Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, and Columbus.
Is that eight teams or nine teams?
That's eight.
Okay.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. So it's...
That seems reasonable.
It's the four in the Southeast.
Yes.
And then four in the...
Central.
The true Midwest.
Yeah.
St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, and Columbus.
Yeah.
And that then puts, of course, all the Northeastern teams in the United
States. The New York teams, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Washington.
Yep. Buffalo, Boston. Which I guess is a New York team technically.
Yes.
So that to me seems like the most rational alignment. The question is, which conference does the Canadian division get put in? That's the question. Because easily you
I
have
wonder
the East.
If we do away with conferences and just have four divisions.
And like a 16-team tournament?
Well,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, I wonder if we do away with conferences because you can't put, you know, you can't have Toronto in the Western Conference or Vancouver in the Eastern Conference.
Nashville's in the West.
I know.
The West is clearly, the Pacific is clearly the West and the East is clearly in the East.
Yes.
But then you have two, you know, you have one that's in, I would actually put the Canadian division in the West.
Okay.
And then, because again, you've got Tampa, Florida, Carolina, Detroit, Columbus.
Right.
All Eastern Conference teams, and then you bring Chicago and Nashville and St. Louis into that.
Yeah.
And it stays in the East. And then you make Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal go to the West, essentially. So that's what I would do. But I kind of like your idea. Let's seed them 1 through 16.
Yeah, do it.
The top four are the top four division winners, and then 5 through 16 are all seeded by total points.
You can go back to the old NHL, kind of, like the Patrick division days.
That sounds fun, man.
Yeah, why not?
Do you have any idea on when we're going to get any information on...
It's got to come soon if they want to start January 1st. I mean, we need to know when training camp's going to be. It would be next month. So I have to imagine that if they really want to start the season by the 1st, that we need to know by the end of November what's going to happen.
There you have it. Anything else? What you got coming up on The Athletic this week?
Well, today we're recording this on Wednesday. I just did a little prospect tier story. Just thinking about which young players have the best shot of making the roster and competing for a spot in camp. And then I'm off again for Thanksgiving. I'm taking another staycation.
Good for you.
So
take as much time as you need, man. You're newlywed. It's 2020. It's the off season. Do what you got to do, my man. Follow him on Twitter at Adam Vingan. You can follow. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic as well. Pay for great journalism, especially in the hockey world. The Athletic just crushes in the NHL. You can follow me at Braden Gall. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show and tell all of your friends. The Gold Standard is the best Nashville Predators podcast anywhere in the world. Make sure you're telling everybody those exact words. Thank you all for listening. This has been The Gold Standard on the 440 Sports Network.